Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny. I'm here with my co-host, Mike. Hello, Mike. Are you there, Mr. Mike? Anyway, Mike, we'll be talking about all things Mets here tonight. We got a ton of things to talk about. Always something exciting going on with the Mets. You just can't go a couple of days without something exciting coming up. I guess we should probably start out talking about the current West Coast trip, the three games that they just played in San Diego. You there, Mike? Mike, not hearing you. Mike, you there?
Hey, can you hear me now?
There you are. You sound great. Sorry about that. So, Mike, we wanted to get
started. Something. It's always something with that. I'll tell you, I can never get on the line. Sorry, Ben.
No, you know what it is? It's just you got so much to say, you're just like breaking the airwaves to get it all out. But it's okay. We solved it. So, you know, Mike, again, a lot to talk about with this team. We are going to be joined by Anthony from the Mets Public Record podcast a little bit later on, and we'll have a lot to talk to Anthony about. But, you know, just to get started, I guess we should talk about the current West Coast trip. I don't even understand it. Even when the Mets are good, these West Coast trips are just so rough for them. And this one started off, you know, in a similar fashion. They lose two out of three against the Padres. After winning the first game, kind of getting our hopes up, they lose the next two. But, you know, it's not even the losing two out of three that kind of leaves most people with a bad taste after these three games. I would say that there are two topics that were discussed, or that, you know, one of them was discussed during the trip and the other one was something that, you know, happened on the field during the trip that have most people, you know, feeling a little bit negative, if you can believe there's negative feelings in Medville these days. The first is regarding the news about David Wright. David Wright was out there and he met with the press while he was there. And it sounds from everything he said, and I know, Mike, you said you heard Sandy Alderson on the radio just before this, before we went live here. It sounds like everybody is, while they say upbeat things, we're going to see him back sooner than later. There's no date, and it just seems like we have no idea when this guy's going to be back on the field, Mike.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good. And you know, when you start getting into medical things, you're going way beyond my pay grade. But, you know, just trying to read between the lines, and we followed this team for a while, They tend to not really like to give you all the bad news on the injury stuff. And today Sandy said the words, it's going to be a while, you know, for David. You know, he didn't say the return is imminent or it won't be too long. Or I don't know. To me, it sounded really like it could be, you know, a while. So I think it was like they were setting expectations. And it's really, you know, it's sad news. The whole thing with Wright is, you know, you talk to the, you know, I'm a, you know, it's David Wright. The guy has been, you know, he set so many offensive records and been such a great Met. And, you know, the whole thing, he's still in his prime. It's very sad.
No, it is. And I know that you really, you know, this is not like Tommy John surgery. Back injuries are very different in that you can't just take a comp like you can for Tommy John and say, well, this guy had surgery. That means he's going to be out for whatever it is, number of months. That's not the way it works with Tommy John surgery. I mean, with back injuries. So you really don't know how long it's going to take. However, it's easy for us to start thinking about, you know, back injuries from the past. People like Don Mattingly keep getting thrown around. And Lenny Dykstra and guys who had, you know, a back injury, and within a couple of years they were not even above serviceable players, let alone all-stars like David Wright. And, you know, not too long after that they were out of the game. And that's pretty, you know, look, you're right. You got to split this into two, and either way it's not good. One is that you love David Wright. He's a great guy. He's been the face of the franchise, all that sort of stuff. So you hate to see it end badly for him. But also, if you're going to be a little cold, that's really tough for this team. They have very little offense as it is. They have very little money to spend as it is. And then somebody who's got a large financial commitment for several more years and really is the cornerstone offensively, you'd have to take out. That's tough. And if he's going to be, you know, on a downward trajectory and he's only going to play, I mean, I think I conservatively said, you know, what if he's the kind of guy who now plays like 90 to 100 games a year and he's just, you know, a slightly above average player, which I think we'd have to take given the news we have right now. Well, you can't just count on him then. You need to have another player. You need to build around other guys. And it kind of changes the whole dynamic, Mike.
Oh, no, it's very tricky. And when we talked about the current team, remember we've said all along that Wright, Dyer, and Granderson, you know, were all critical, right? You know, even though they were a little bit older guys offensively, because there just isn't the offensive depth, not just on the 25-man, but on the 40-man roster. And, you know, there's nothing coming. You know, I mean, now Conforto's finally made it to Double A. There's not a lot of hitting in this organization. And, you know, I'm not impressed right now by rookie league guys. And, you know, Wright was being counted on to be a middle of the order, you know, number three hitter. The expectations were he'd be the best hitter on the team, right? I mean, look at the roster.
Mikey, not just the number three hitter on the team, which obviously he is, but it's a team that was really trying to win with very few offensive players.
Right.
So I would argue that his value to the Mets, his importance to the Mets, is greater than some other teams' number three batters, because he is counted on to be, you know, far and away the best offensive player and carrying a lot of guys who really can't hit, that they're going to try to scrounge together runs. Then you on a team like this, to lose that guy, it's even more of an impact than on some other teams. That's what I would argue.
I would agree. In fact, I will go this far, and it will seem like blasphemy to a lot of people because everybody is just so, you know, and he's pitching tonight, and I love him, you know, Matt Harvey. But because of the composition of the overall, you know, organizational roster, you know, to me, last year we lost Harvey, and if the team had been put together correctly around it, I think that could have been dealt with even better than it was. I don't think the pitching was destroyed by that. The effect of losing Wright, to me, is so much more damaging. You know, I'm not getting into who's more valuable player at this time, you know, of their careers, but what Wright is needed for this team is so hard for them to get anywhere else versus we have, you know, all this pitching depth. So it's a terrible blow.
No, and I completely agree. And Mike, that brings me to a point that I want to make, which we have to categorize as wasted air because it's never going to happen. But to me, this emphasizes how much the team needs to make a trade to bolster the team. Now, we've talked offline. I think a guy like Ben Zobrist makes so much sense for this team. It's not even funny. I mean, you couldn't draw up somebody more that you need. He can play third. He can play short. He can play the outfield if you want to try to get some days rest for Kadire and for Granderson. He's a free agent at the end of the year, so you know that factors in. You're not taking on salary. It's such a no-brainer. And you could throw in guys like, if you don't love Zobrist, you know, there's Martin Prado, the Bill. He's got more of a contract, I believe. There's a handful of other guys we could probably throw out there. I mean, somebody had mentioned Omar Infante, except Omar Infante, I believe, makes a ton of money. But you get my drift. You really need one of these kinds of guys who could play multiple positions. It's insurance against, you know, whether Wright comes back or not. But even if he does come back, you can use this guy. He can play other positions. I just think you have to do this. And with the pitching depth that the team has, It really seems like it's a waste of resources not to try to do this. But I think we all know it's never going to happen. It makes so much sense that there's no way it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think if they're going to make a move, you might be on the right track. I mean, I don't think it's – I guess this is going to – I don't know if it's going to sound positive or not, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the team makes a move this year at the Zobrist-Prado level. And it would be some incremental progress to the roster, you know, depending on who they gave up. But let's just do theory. It's not going to be anybody that has a bat in their hands normally. And, you know, if the right trade got made, it would help the roster. But honestly, they really, I believe, in the offseason would have been time to do it, would needed to do something bigger than that. You know, like, they're just short an impact. You know, you need to, and those guys are nice players, but, you know, Ben Zobrist is, you know, like Murphy light to me. I don't even look at him as Murphy. He's an improvement over the guys we're bringing in off the bench. He plays a lot of positions. So I would like to have him on the team, but I feel like the ship sailed already. The real deals that didn't get made, you know, I don't know who the guy would have been, but, you know, somebody that could have added somewhere between that 3 and 5 slot. We really short there.
Look, I hear you. I have two counterpoints to you. One is, who would you rather see in the lineup, Ben Zobrist or Ruben Tejada? So I think if you look at it that way, it still is an upgrade, but I still agree with you, even that being said. You know, you'd have to think, look, again, we had Matt Cerrone on last week. Matt believes that if the impact move is to be made, it would be an outfielder. I know that's tough because of the Kadire-Granderson contract situation. I would counter that it seems to make more sense that it has to be a shortstop, and then we're back to Troy Tulowitzki.
But the
problem with that is that it's a ton of money. And then, you know, again, we have to say the name once a show or we get taken off the air. You can go in the other direction and try to get Jose Reyes, who's not a middle of the order guy. But let's put that again in the wasted air, never, ever, ever going to happen category as well.
I stay in touch with a pretty good blogger. If anybody ever wants to, for fun, you know, read about Toronto, named Ian Hunter. He writes a blog called The Blue Jay Hunter up there in Toronto. And we're in touch. You know, I wrote some stuff for him a couple of times. He wrote some stuff for me. And he has, the Toronto, we don't know what's going on up there, really, right? They're talking about moving him to the outfield that he can't play a good shortstop anymore, which is interesting. Yeah, they're talking about moving him to left, that maybe his days of playing shortstop are over. I mean, I haven't seen him, you know, I don't know about you. You know, he's gone and that's it. You know, like, I haven't seen him really play a lot of shortstop, but that's just so to be cynical, if he's not a good defensive shortstop anymore, we'll be all over that.
No, but that to me is insane, because there's two reasons why that's insane, Mike, in my mind. Number one is because it's not that long ago that Jose Reyes was on the Mets, and he was definitely an above-average shortstop. Number one.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Number two, I'm not sure.
A lot of leg injuries, though.
Well, excuse me?
He's had a lot of leg injuries, though.
That's true. But let's go to my point number two. Have you watched a Met game this year? Have you seen what we're seeing at shortstop on a nightly basis?
It's got to be better than what we have. No, I understand. I just think it's interesting. And it probably, if they're even thinking the littlest bit like that there, it actually means he could be definitely, like, there's some scenario where somebody could get him, for, you know, because he's not that valuable. He's much less valuable, is what I would say, if you're not going to play him.
Look, you may have ruined the rest of the show because I may not be able to concentrate at all by thinking about the 0.01% chance that Jose Reyes can come back to the Mets. And that's probably too high. But I'm going to dream anyway. I'm going to dream. We have a few other things to talk about, but I think we want to get to our guest right now, Mike. I know that a lot of the topics you're going to want to get Anthony's take on. We're joined now by Anthony, Mets Public Record Podcast. Anthony, you're on with Vinny and Mike, Blue and Orange Nation, talking Mets. How are you tonight?
Hey, what's up, guys? Doing great.
Hey, Anthony. How are you?
Hey, Mike. What's up, Vinny? All right. I just want to warn the listeners that I don't have as much cachet as Matthew Cerrone, so hopefully people aren't expecting a tall
I don't know. You're just being modest, Anthony.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short, man.
Thanks. Oh man. Yeah, I heard you guys talking to Jose Reyes. I'm getting a little worried. I was afraid to even come on when I heard that discussion.
Every week we have to mention Reyes' name. It's very important. We also have to mention something about – if you don't say something glowing about Matt Harvey, that's a problem as well. But that's really not a problem.
Yeah, we have like a list. I think we might be through the checklist this week, man.
Yeah, we've gone through it quick. We wanted to make sure we gave Anthony – as much leeway as he needed to talk about anything he wants. Because I think we've covered the ability to make a trade. We've covered we'll have to talk about some kind of crazy lineup situation. Actually, I mentioned Tejada was leadoff. So we're done. We've got everything covered. Anthony, it's totally up to you. You've got the rest of the agenda to set you.
Well, I heard you guys talk, and I know I was going to say, Mike made a good point about the Mets needing an impact bat, and I totally agree. Ben Zobrist is a nice player, and, a lot of people have talked about the fact that he can play all different positions, and it's funny because he would fit right in, right, with all these guys because, I mean, you have two guys out of position in the infield, and Flores, who all of a sudden becomes the softest player on the Mets where he can't be he can't be taken out of shortstop because they don't want to ruin his confidence. But I guess what I'm getting, right, all of a sudden, the same thing with Harvey, too, but we can get to that later. The fact that the six-man rotation looks like it's on hold because of Harvey. But to go back, why not the Mets? I know the Milwaukee Brewers look like they're in fire sale mode, so I was thinking maybe a guy like Ryan Braun, could play third base. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Now he's played there before.
And I also think you could. I know he's not the kind of player like Zobrist that you would want to move around positions much. He's not that super utility type, obviously. He's a former MVP. He's still in his prime. But I could also see you playing him at third and then also putting him in the outfield occasionally as well if Wright is back and you want to then play him in the outfield. Look, I think that's the kind of move this team ultimately has to make, is that kind of big bat, take a gamble on a guy who could really be an impact bat. The question is, what position do you go for? That might be good because maybe you could turn him into a third base outfield mixture guy. Maybe that's the move.
Yeah, you just wonder what they
thing
have
I would
to give
say,
up.
Another thing I would say that I think we're all kind of forgetting, if the theory is that, we're going to need to replace Wright, is if we did go for an impact bat and he played the outfield, Kadai has played a lot of third base in his career. And so, that shouldn't be, I don't know why that, wouldn't be possible to happen as well.
Yeah, and the whole situation right now, I just have this strange feeling that there's an underlining story that we're not seeing with the Mets. I guess what I'm getting at is like this whole thing with David Wright and not coming back, and we didn't learn anything from his interviews the last couple of days. We didn't learn anything from Alderson either. I think right now they're in kind of uncharted waters, and the thing with this organization is like they kind of drag their feet. So I'm a little worried about how they're going to handle this situation, not necessarily his injury, but just how they're going to handle the fact that he's not going to be playing. Because you're right, they need an impact bat. I mean, as much as they're kind of treading above water and Tejada, it's a good story. The fact that he's been given like three different chances and Terry Collins has kind of taken him under his wing and everything. And he's really actually produced offensively, but he made two errors last night. This is eventually going to blow up in their face because the Atlanta Braves aren't that far behind, and the Nationals are actually playing under their heads, I think. But even though their pitching staff has kind of taken a hit, with Strasburg and Pfister on the DL. I just feel like I'm worried about it. The Mets have, you know what it is, they have to win this month. Like, they came out of a losing month in May, and I think they just have to win the month of June.
Yeah, I know this. The margin for error, you know, they had the great winning streak, and that was great. Now their margin for error is definitely, you know, decreased. They've given a lot of that back, and, you know, some really good reasons for that, and the injuries were the biggest. But, right, if they're serious about winning this year, it's hard to see how they can stand pat and get by. I just don't know if there's enough, you know, in a way of hitting, pull it off. I just don't know about it. And now that's the office. Now, the other big to-do right now, Anthony, is the current, you know, six-man rotation, and I don't know, what is it now, a 14-man pitching staff? I'm not sure. There's a lot of pitchers. But what's your thoughts on this whole six-man rotation innovation, I'll call it?
There's twofold. You mentioned the 14 pitching, though. I don't even know how many pitchers. But I'll get it. The six-man rotation. First of all, I don't like it. I mean, I'm not a pitching coach, obviously. But, I mean, I just don't like it. I think that you're coddling these guys. I mean, Jacob DeGrom and Matt Harvey, they're great pitchers. They're one and one A. And you're taking away four starts because you think that in September you're going to be in the hunt. Why not take this carpe diem approach, you know, like just seize the day and let these guys pitch. And then you have guys like Dylan G and Jonathan Neese who really aren't even pitching well. It's not like you have five, six guys that are pitching well. It's almost, you know, they're kind of on scholarship. I don't know if you ever listened to Carl Banks. He always says that guys are on scholarship, you know. I do want to continue to talk about the pitching, but the bench has been terrible. So you kind of taken away another hitter, and then the fact that you have six guys in the starting rotation, the Mets look a little amateur. It look kind of like an amateur organization.
I find the whole, not even a six-man, the whole composition of the roster, you know, it shows you, like, how little hitting there is in the overall organization that, you know, like, the other night I saw Leatherich get up in the bullpen, and I'm like, he's still around? Like, what do we need him for? You know, like, we got guys that seem to me that they only pitch every 14 days out in that bullpen, and yet we, you know, every time we need a pinch hitter, it's like, you know, it's Danny Muno, you know, like it's like we don't have anybody we can hit, no organization, it's terrible.
And also, Collins is talking about pinch hitting with Syndergaard and DeGrom. I mean, it just, you know, he has DeGrom and Syndergaard as his possible pinch hitters. I don't know if he's serious about that or. To me, that's a joke. He's just making a joke out of the situation.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Danny Muno, is he still there? And come on, Eric Campbell, this guy, no offense, seems like a nice guy, and he admirably filled in for David Wright when he first got hurt. But last night I was watching the game, the guy's an automatic out now. I almost wanted him to strike out instead of getting into a double play.
Yeah, no, the bench is weak, and that's where to Vinny's point, you know, because if somebody comes in like a Zobrist or a Prado, even though they're not great players, somebody that's currently in the starting lineup moves to the bench, and yeah, you know, maybe at least you get like a major league player up, you know, if you need a hit in the seventh inning. So it would be anybody that can swing a bat a little bit in any way, shape, or form would be, I think, useful right now. Now, this is like the breaking news. I think you may or may not know, but tonight they made a little bit of a positional change. They're going to move Murphy to third tonight. He's at third base in the lineup, and Tejada to second. With Flores, though, on the other side, of course, he's not moving. So if it was you, do you feel like it's important? I don't know, because I guess his mental well-being or whatever, for him to stay short, or would you try to move him around a little bit right now too?
Well, isn't it kind of funny that Tejada makes two errors, and he's I guess he's got a hard head or he's got a strong constitution. He's able to take him out of third base and put him at second base. Meanwhile, Flores gets, I don't know how many errors. He has about 10 errors right now, and he's still at shortstop because you know, let's face it, Sandy Alderson's a very stubborn man. I mean, he's got to be, you know, he wants to make sure that he's the one that said Flores will be the shortstop. Honestly, I don't like Murphy at third base. I think they should put – this is what I heard. I heard that Tejada's a shortstop, obviously, and then you have Murphy at second and Flores at third. Why
yeah,
not
that,
just
we haven't
do that?
Even seen that. I know, we haven't seen that. I mean, I don't know how – I have hardly seen Flores play third to know whether he can play a decent third. But Flores at short with Tejada on the field – is kind of I do think they're doing that to drive me crazy, because I just feel like it's a hard place. He's got to play short. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, like I always think of the old Met teams. You know, it'll be like you know Jose Oquendo's in the lineup and they're playing at third. Like you would go, what? You know, like, it just what's hard to do it at these other positions? It's maddening to me.
And then you know what that tells you? That tells you that David Wright, he's not going to be back until maybe the All-Star break if we're lucky, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because I think they're committing, right? And that's, I mean, just to go back to, I know the David Wright story, I don't want to beat it like a dead horse, but I didn't like the whole thing, the fact that they were so vague about it. You know, oh, I'll be back sooner than later, and the doctors don't really know how bad it, you know, it's just everything. I know this is one of those injuries that you can't, you know, it's not a hamstring, it's not a broken wrist or whatever, but I just don't like this whole, like, gray area where they can't – why don't they just say, listen, David, you're not going to come back until August 1st. We're going to go out and get somebody. And this is ridiculous. You know, and all this and talking, it's a week-to-week. This isn't a week-to-week thing. This is blah, 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 you know, with all those little – it's like, just make a decision and stop. Like, you know, this is grown men. You're not going to hurt their feelings.
When it comes to the what I'll call, like, their disclosure on injuries – you know, it really predates Alderson on this and that one. I feel like, you know, I wonder if it goes, you know, if we're going up the chain with that. I almost get the idea that the owners, like, never want to admit that a guy like Wright, you know, who people pay to see, isn't going to be around. You know, and it's like, I remember when Reyes, the one year, he missed almost the whole year. And, you know, Jerry Manuel kept acting like he'd be back the next day. You know, like he was day to day for 120 days or whatever it was. it makes you so suspicious that when a guy really is, you immediately say, "Oh my God, he's never going to be back." it's an odd marketing strategy, I feel.
Mike,
it makes me very suspicious.
One thing for you, Mike, to get kind of give a little bit of credence to what you're saying. There are two promotional dates in June related to David Wright. There's a David Wright jersey and a David Wright Free Shirt Friday, both in June.
Yeah. And like they want to give the illusion, you know, that he's going to be back. And it makes it uneasy that if he's ever going to be back.
Sorry, but you want to hear something funny? I'm going to that game, and you know who's presenting those jerseys? Hospital for Special Surgery.
Oh, jeez. That's going to get some play. Oh, boy. That's not going to be the last time we hear that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was funny. Like perfect timing. Poor guy. You know, I felt bad for David Wright when I heard that.
So now, Anthony, your gut feel as a guy that follows the team closely, do you think what you see is what you've got, or do you think something is coming? It's a little bit like, you know, they're gonna bring us do something, as Sandy would call it, externally to try to improve this roster.
Well, the thing with that is, there's two things. They don't want to really take on too much salary. So let's say...
Yep, we know that. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's one of the things. They don't want a big contract. That's why you hear, like, people on the radio talking about, Frazier, that guy on the Reds, because he's young, he has an expiring sort of contract. But I don't know why. Why would the Reds trade them? And also the amount of prospects that the Mets will have to give up. I don't think the Mets, they're not going to trade Syndergaard or Mats. They do have some guys in the minor leagues that that they could part with, I would think. That not Conforto. I wouldn't think that Conforto would be one. He's almost on the fast track up to the major leagues. Dilson Herrera is not going anywhere. They've been dangling these two pitchers around, G and Meese and Rafael Montero. Maybe a guy like Dominic Smith. I don't know how high they are on him. They drafted him in 2013. So I'm not sure. I think it's almost like they need a big bat and they need to make a move, but they don't want to give up the major guys that they have and they don't want to take on any payroll. So it's the difficult, tough call, you know. I'm not sure.
Right. I think it's there is – I mean – the payroll issue, you know, is hard to get around, that it's real, right? I mean, we kind of know that's real, too. And that does – these in-season trades tend to be that whole buyer-seller thing. And usually the guys that are getting rid of significant players are doing so because they want to get rid of their money. You know, and if you won't take the money on, it doesn't even matter if you got the prospects. You know, like, you got to take the money, too. So that could be – you know, we don't know, and maybe, you know – fingers crossed that budget would be given to take on a few bucks along the line. But that's why I kind of keep coming back to, you know, Vinny's probably on the right track with whether it's hopefully it's enough to sort of push us just a little bit higher, you know, the Zobrist Prado guys, because I don't know if we'll go much above that on the dollars.
No, definitely. And that's kind of what the Mets, that's up their alley. They'll get guys like that. You know, like, I mean, look at the bench. You know, John Mayberry Jr. And a year before that was Chris Young. And even though they signed him for so much money. But I think Alderson has that type of feeling with when he brings guys in, I think he tries to get them on the cheap. And he tries to get lightning in the bottle. You know, also make them look smarter than he really is.
Anthony, didn't you see the title of the book? He's the baseball maverick who revived the Mets. Isn't that all you need to know?
He walks around. He has to get that guy to make him a T-shirt with the book cover on it so he can walk around with his T-shirt on.
There's a free shirt Friday for you.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, we're trying to help the marketing department. We know they listen, Vinny.
Yes, we do. We do. Oh, they've spoken to me about stuff. So, yes, they do. Oh, that's great. That is
there
just great.
There's one. A free shirt. Yeah, but get that guy. What's his name? The guy that does Seven Line guy. I got him to make the shirt.
All right, so Anthony, I have a question for you before we let you go. Talking a little bit about the six-man rotation, and look, the main reason, or at least what they're saying, is the reason that they're doing it is because of the combination of trying to keep guys healthy / trying to keep them at their prescribed innings limits so that they're able to pitch deep into the year. I think another reason, though, frankly, is also it's convenient because it lets them keep guys like G and Meese in the rotation, who they are actually paying some money, and they're hoping that they perform well enough to perhaps get traded. But putting all those factors into the blender, Anthony, if it was up to you, what rotation would you have? Five-man, six-man, and if it's five-man, who's the odd man out?
Definitely the five. I think, well, if they were able to trade one of those guys, I know Dylan G was the guy they wanted to trade. I think they would have traded him by now if he didn't get hurt. You know, he had that kind of mysterious groin injury. I guess he was hurt for three starts. I would definitely go with Harvey, DeGrom. You got to keep Syndergaard. I mean, unless he totally bottoms out. I mean, he had a tough game the other night against the Padres, gave up a lot of runs. And then you have Meese because, I mean, him too, you know, he's got to step it up. I mean, you do have Mats waiting in the wing. So you have Meese, DeGrom, Harvey, Cologne, and Syndergaard. And, you know, Dylan G, I don't know if you guys saw that story earlier today. It was some kind of, they all wore orange T-shirts in support of gun violence. And Dylan G was very outspoken against having to be in that picture. And, you know, for a guy who's coming off the disabled list, who's looking to be traded and had a bad outing, he shouldn't really be bumping any heads. You know, just go with the flow. So I think Dylan G, it feels like he's got one foot out the door. But what I'm getting at is that eventually these six-man rotations kind of just even themselves out, and one of these guys is either going to get hurt or he's just going to pitch himself out of it. But so we have to just wait and see.
No, and I tend to agree with you, too. I do think it's funny that a lot of times everybody complains about what are they going to do with these extra guys, and it just kind of works itself out. But I just think with the Mets' financial situation, you would think that works itself out means that a G or a Nice gets traded. But then again, we've been saying that since November, and neither one of those guys was moved. So, you know, that's the other thing. We complain about the financial – check the box for financial issues, Mike. We're going to talk about it. We all talk about the new paradigm that the Mets are the team with no money, and there was an article today, I think it was in USA Today, comparing and contrasting the Padres to the Mets about how the Padres were the big spenders and they have a higher payroll even though a smaller market, blah blah blah, and we all kind of have accepted that as the reality. Yet at the same time, they didn't need Dylan G in the winter. They supposedly shopped him around like crazy. But they didn't like what they were being offered, so they didn't trade him. So if they're so cheap, his $5 million they could have offloaded, but they chose not to because they didn't think they were getting back enough. If they were totally broke, you know, as you know, the picture that's being painted that, you know, they're scraping together nickels to keep the lights on, then that doesn't make sense either. How could you be so picky? So that just goes into the other category of we just don't really know what the heck's going on with them financially.
Yeah, they get, I don't know. I thought you were even going to go like even their philosophy is kind of confusing too. I was going to say in the beginning of the season, remember I was on this podcast in the preseason and we were talking about the defense and the fact that you have such good pitching, but you have such bad defense. Just seems like such an oxymoron these days.
No, I completely, and we agreed with you then, and I agree with you now, and that's why talk like what you were just describing with Mike about keeping Flores at short when you have Tejada, just, again, it makes you scratch your head because even there is no real, true, defined narrative with this team. They are totally contradictory in every way. They pitching in defense, but they put the worst defense on the field, even with the players they have. Not just that they're picking bad defense, but they're playing the guys they have out of position. And then here's a team that we're saying has no money to upgrade, yet they won't trade the guys that they don't need who are making money because they're too – they really want to get the maximum return. That doesn't comply either. And we've said this before. We say this on a lot of shows too. Sandy is that guy in your fantasy league who will not make a trade unless he robs you. You know, he will not make a fair trade, even if his entire team is on the disabled list. We all know these guys in fantasy. They're still holding out to make you give them Mike Trout for, you know, a backup middle infielder. And that's Sandy. And the problem is every once in a while it works. He gets the deal he wants, and it kind of emboldens him to continue to have that philosophy of, well, I'm not going to make a move. And that's how we end up with the kind of team we have right now.
Yeah. I just came through on my wire. I just think it's funny. 2 minutes ago from Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal, he's got a quote from Terry Collins that just fits what we're discussing. The quote is, "We've got to start putting our best defense out there," said Terry Collins, who then explained why he's leaving Wilmer Flores at shortstop. So, you know, which I'm sure wasn't about defense. So, it's so serious.
No, that's perfect,
no,
Mike.
His answers are cracking me up, you know, his when he tries to explain all these different things. Terry Collins. Like the other day, he was upset because Somebody, Jay Horowitz, had said that Michael Kedire had a neck issue. you know, he's all worried about that. He's like, it does. I don't even think it really matters. I mean, the offense is, I mean, they're actually coming back a little bit. And Daniel Murphy's actually producing, and, you know, Ruben Tejada's average is over 300. Hopefully they can get Travis Tonneau back. But guys like Kevin Pulwecki and Curtis Granderson, I think, have to hit a little better. And Juan Lagares, too, has kind of fallen off a little bit. I'm wondering how hurt he really is, too. You never can tell.
I do think his injury is worse than we've been led to believe, Anthony. I think it's definitely affecting him. Also in the field, he doesn't look exactly the same. He's still by far the best defensive player on the team, but he has also seemed like he's possibly a little bit slowed by that injury. And if you had a better bench, you could afford to maybe rest him a little bit too to see if you can get him healthy. But I don't think any of us want to see John Mayberry Jr. playing every day for 2 weeks while Lagares goes on the DL. So that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I could do without that.
Well, you know, it's a shame because they traded Matt Dendecker to get Jerry Blevins, and, you know, Jerry Blevins got hurt, and then that would have been a nice guy to kind of spell Lagares. I mean, he never really was able to hit that well, Dendecker, but he was a good defensive player, though.
You remember, at the time, he was ranked defensively ahead of Lagares, which, thinking about what we've seen with Lagares over the past year and a half, that seems insane. But he had the same defensive chops, you know, coming up through the minors. So I think you hit something on the head there, Anthony. It's too bad we don't, you know, we had to use that bullet to get Blevins. But I guess Siciliani is our guy now, Mike.
It's our man. It's our new man.
Yeah. Do you notice when you watch Siciliani, he every time he's at bat, this is the pace of play. This must be going. This must be driving MLB crazy. He has to pick up dirt every time and wipe it on his hand. And watch what he does. Every time the ball is pitched, he goes down, picks up a little dirt, and he wipes his hands with it, and then he gets back in the box. Well, he's in the box already, but he has his little quirks. I don't know. If you get a chance, look at it next time.
I have to look at that, Anthony. I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah, when you see
it, I didn't catch that either. I'm going to watch for that.
I'll be cracking up now when you think of that.
Yeah, he's a human rain delay.
Anthony, I thought you were going to go in a different direction. I thought you were going to say, have I noticed every time that Siciliani is at bat, it ends with strike three? because I have noticed that. That I have noticed. But the dirt, I haven't.
Yeah, he does that. It's funny. Yeah, there's not too many guys like that anymore that have those little kind of delays before they get in. Every time. Every time a pitch is thrown, he goes in there.
No, like you said, with the pace of play, that's going to be going further and further away. We're not going to be able to see much more of that.
I mean, the games seem like they're faster.
You know, they have, and the Mets are really doing their part for the pace of play because they're trying not to get that many hits per game to kind of keep things going. So maybe that was part of Alderson's deal with the commissioner's office. You know, he'll take the job and he'll really help them with the pace of play by making sure he puts a team out there that just doesn't hit the ball.
Taking one for the league.
Oh, man. And ulterior motive the whole time. Oh, God.
Well, listen, really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks a lot. You mind if I mention something? I have a podcast also called BBA Live. It's part of the Baseball Bloggers Alliance, and it's every Tuesday night. I'm with Ricky Keeler. We kind of go around the league, and it's at 10 o'clock on Tuesday. So far, so good. It's pretty hard to, you know, it's crazy when you deal with all these teams. And then maybe tonight, I'm not sure what Rich is doing, but we're going to try to do the Met podcast. Even though the game is going to be going on, I don't know what we're going
to
do.
Okay. All right. So I'll try to give a listen tonight at 10, and I'll mute the game. And, you know, maybe you guys can do a little play-by-play, right?
Yeah. Gary Cohen style, right?
That'd be
thanks
great.
Lot, guys. Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks again, Anthony. We really do appreciate it.
All right. Cool. Anytime.
Mike, that was great with Anthony. Some great stuff. I don't know why. He does a great job, but he brings out the cynic in us. Why is that? Because he's positive?
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's a little bit of the cynic, but I think I hope everybody realizes too, you know, part of it is, and that's what, one of the things I like Anthony. Anthony kind of keeps it light. And a lot of times I know myself when I get my most cynical, it's really more what I refer to as my gallows humor. You know, and it's half, you know, a lot of it's half, I got to do have my tongue somewhat, you know, in my cheek. So, I think he does bring out that side, especially in me. And, but it's, you know, just fooling around, you know, it's in the end, it's baseball.
Right.
I love it, but it's not, you know, life and death.
No, and a great spot. That was a great spot for Anthony, definitely. One of the things that we talked about a little bit when we were talking about the six-man rotation and Anthony's suggestion to go back to the five-man rotation, we were talking about the starting pitching, and you had mentioned that tonight is, you know, Harvey night, which it's funny. I know he is the ace, and we could debate that, I guess, a little bit. But and traditionally, the ace is the guy who has to stop the losing streak and all that stuff. It just seems like every Harvey night is one of these games that we're coming off of a loss and we're looking to kind of stop the bleeding. It's almost unfair to do to this guy every single start. But that's what it just seems to be every time you're saying, oh, my God, we have to win this Harvey game. You know, that's a tough spot to be in. But I do want to mention, you know, while Harvey gets all the attention, he's, you know, on John Stewart, you know, he's the guy, you know, they had a Matt Cave night at the state at Citi Field last Friday, all that stuff.
I was in the cave.
You were in the Matt Cave with the mask?
And I was like, well, I put my tickets before the promotion began. I must have been the only one. You know,
okay.
Like I had already bought tickets there, which is why I guess they made that the spot. To the cave,
right.
And it was weird because I was surrounded by masks, you know, and I guess I was the Joker. I mean, you know, because I didn't have one, but I was in that spot.
All joking aside, no pun intended, I think the Matt Cave is a great idea. I mean, I've always been a little bit jealous of the King's Court in Seattle. I mean, I don't know if they started it, but they're the ones who really, you
mm-hmm.
know, pushed it the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every Felix Hernandez start, they have special shirts and they're in a special section. And it just is so great. And if the Mets can really pull that off with Harvey and have a section for the Matt Cave with the masks and the shirts or whatever, I just think that would be great. But putting that aside, you know, it's funny because while he is the guy, capital T, capital G, it almost makes you forget how good Jacob DeGrom is. You know, I know that after DeGrom's start the other night, you know, there was some, you know, people saying, oh, who is the 2-8, all that stuff. I don't think that really matters, frankly. But I do think that we should be conscious of the fact that, you know, DeGrom has just as much of a chance to win just as many games and strike out as many guys as Harvey does. And, you know, maybe he's, you know, he's got a little bit less swagger, but that doesn't mean he's not as effective, Mike.
Oh, DeGrom's been fabulous. I mean, these last two starts, you know, have been two in a row at close to no-hit, you know, right? I mean, no-hit type starts, right? I think he had the one hitter backed up by the two-hitter, or was it something in between, maybe? But
it might have been
he's been...
between, it's definitely
okay.
Two out of three was a one hitter and a two hitter.
Okay, right. I mean, he's just been, you know, the one hitter was, I mean, which is ridiculous. He was hardly touched in that game, and then the other night, I have to admit, and I was frustrated by that. I only saw, I guess, the first inning, and then I decided to go with Rewind the next morning, and because
right.
the Mets scored seven runs, they basically didn't show DeGrom. You know, like in Rewind, they just kept showing how they scored the runs. And
right,
they
right.
didn't even show them. And I'm like, I'm looking and I'm realizing as the innings are going by, he's not giving up any hits. You know, and I'm like, well, this guy's throwing a no-hitter. Shouldn't we be seeing some of that? But he must have been pretty good.
Yeah, he really was. That last start was phenomenal. And again, it just brings
yeah.
to mind the fact that, you know, it's not just about Harvey. I mean, and that's
oh, yeah.
what makes – look – We make a few snarky comments and we talk a little bit negatively about everything, but let's be, you know, positive, but realistic positive as well, Mike. This is the kind of team that if they got to the postseason would be so dangerous. Because if you look at the Giants last year, and granted, the Giants did score some runs last year in the postseason. However, you know, the main reason they won the World Series is because Madison Bumgarner went insane, okay? The Mets have the potential for 2-3 guys to perhaps go insane in the postseason and be that kind of Bumgarner type. So that makes you realize that if they could just get there, they really would have a shot. And that's what makes some of this a little frustrating, because you want to make sure that you get all the pieces you can to get there. But it's also pretty exciting to know that, you know, that's for a short series, this team could really be dominant.
No, when Greg Prince was on our podcast, I thought he did a tremendous job when he used, and you have to be a little older to know exactly what those teams were like. The 1970 to 1975 Mets as a comp for the current roster. And that was a team that only snuck into the postseason once because it just had no offense. I mean, you know, Don Hahn was playing center field, and, you know, Bud Harrelson couldn't hit a lick. You know, I mean, there just was no offense on that roster. The one year they snuck in, they only won 82 games in 73. They were so dangerous. I mean, they went to the seventh game of the World Series once they got in because Receiver, Kuzman, Matlack, you know, I mean, they took out the freaking big red machine in the postseason. So if we could just get there, you know, like, that's what's frustrating. I think that's where some of the snarkiness comes from. You know, you've got what it takes to actually be very interesting if you got to the postseason. And so then you're starting to think, okay, well, you know, we can't let that opportunity pass without ever getting there, though. And that's,
right.
That's sort of what's got, I think, so many Mets fans kind of a little, a little bipolar these days.
No, because at the same time, that's what's weird, is that you have this optimism. And again, I don't think it's Pollyanna optimism, Mike. I think it's well-founded that you say, man, with this pitching staff and they're young and it's so deep that if a couple, even if you remember, Zach Wheeler is on the missing this whole season. So even if next year somebody else gets hurt, you know, he should be back by midseason next year. So
absolutely.
So,
and Mats is still not around. You know, I mean,
and Mats is not around.
You know,
Mats, right.
Mats is putting up insane numbers. Remember, nobody can pitch in that PCL.
Right. In Vegas, you're absolutely right.
He's blowing away what Harvey and Wheeler did in that league.
Right. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. So you go back to say, okay, you have all these guys. They're going to be here for a while. Even the pessimists who want to point to, saying that Harvey's going to leave after 2018. That's after 2018, Mike. We got this year and three more years with this kind of pitching staff. It's really tough to be that negative. I mean, we talk about the lineup and we talk about all this, you know, but the pitching staff is going to be good for a few years at least, with this kind of, you know, multiple aces potential. It is exciting, and it does make you realize that if they could just scrape through with luck, with Alderson somehow, you know, pulling a rabbit out of a hat, whatever, you know, this could be really something special. So, you know, we got to try to keep that in mind when we start to get down about some of the minutia. Not that the minutia isn't maddening, but we do have to try to get to see the forest for the trees.
No, bottom line, and we discussed it before, you know, we're still right there, you know, right? So it's not like the team is 10 under. So there's a lot of good going on, too. I agree.
All right, Mike, before we wrap up, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to do our Met of the Week. And, you know, I know we had talked, we wanted to do perhaps somebody who is not a current Met, somebody historical, but we decided, I don't know how you don't have your Met of the Week be Bartolo Colon. We talk about these. We talked about Harvey and DeGrom and Syndergaard and Matt's coming. But lo and behold, not only is Bartolo Colon, I think he's tied for the National League lead in wins with 8. So he's obviously the team leader in wins. But also, he has already gotten his 3 hits that he promised Kevin Long that he would get 3 hits, including an RBI double in his last start that was actually, you know, it wasn't a double that it was a bloop over somebody's head. He had a line drive to left center field. this guy, and again, I will admit, you know, back to our, you know, how do you figure the Mets out discussion from a few minutes ago. When they signed Cologne, we said, you know, why, when a team doesn't have money, how do you dedicate it to a pitcher? Why do you give him the second year? This is crazy. I said all that. I will admit that. Here we are almost midway through the second year. He's been more than we could have asked for. He's holding up the second year. And he, in some, you know, Harvey Day is Harvey Day. I got that. We just talked about the DeGrom. But the cult of Cologne makes his game so entertaining as well. You want to see him bat and, you know, try to run and all this stuff. You know, that all that, again, Sandy is justified by a move that was at the time a bit of a head scratcher, because here the guy's performing and the fans, can you believe how the fans, a lot of people thought what I did, oh, why Cologne? They should trade Cologne. Now the fans love Cologne. He's like a cult hero. It's amazing, really.
Yes, that has been become very interesting, and yeah, he's been, you know, he's been more fun to watch than I think we would have realized, you know, he would be. I think the only cold water I'd throw in the whole thing, and I was against the Cologne signing also when it took place, is I would feel even to this day, and he's produced, there's no question about that, but if the, so this is to me on Cologne, but on the general manager, is if he was going to sign Cologne, he didn't make the corresponding move. You know, again, we've got a six-man rotation. So, and so if he hadn't signed Cologne, we would not have to have a six-man rotation, and we would have $11 million that's going to Cologne. Like, take the 11 you're paying Cologne and the 11 you're paying Kadire, and we could have just about anybody playing left field. You know, I mean, we could have a $20 million player out there. So I still can't, that's my way of saying I still can't, because of what's happened since, the Cologne signing in a vacuum, good move. The Cologne signing as part of a strategy that I feel has been incomplete, you know, not as good.
Right. No, that's a good point. I mean, again, I think a lot of it when we were talking perhaps negatively about the Cologne signing, it wasn't so much about Bartolo Cologne and his performance.
Right.
It was more about the, if you have limited resources, team with pitching depth, spend that kind of money, $11 million, on another pitcher rather than on offense. And even though Cologne has been so entertaining and popular and a good pitcher.
Right. And
I
a
still
good pitcher.
And a good pitcher, but I still think the argument is valid. That $11 million being used on another player, perhaps, you know, again, let's use the, you know, the easy trade-off. If right now you took Cologne off the team, replaced Matt, and put an $11 million offensive player on the field, would you be a better team? I still think the answer is yes. But again, Cologne's performance is something that we do have to give both him credit for, and we do have to give Sandy a little bit of credit for.
Yeah, the guy hasn't been bad. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The move in itself has not backfired, obviously. So that's why I'm not telling anybody on it. I just want to point out that there's a frustration from sort of, I think the corresponding move would have been nice. You know, like,
right,
keep Cologne, and that would have given you the ability to trade a couple of these prospect pitchers, you know, because that window is closed now, because Cologne, crazy as it sounds, we're going to lose Cologne soon now.
Right. Well, we shall see. Well, look, Mike, that about wraps it up. We're out of time. Definitely want to thank our guest, Anthony, from the Mets Public Record podcast. He was a great guest. Thank you, Mike. This was a great show. We'll be back in about 2 weeks. Check will be letting you know the schedule. We're going to try to manage it around the Mets. And hopefully they'll finish this West Coast trip strong against the Diamondbacks and then get back home and win some games. And hopefully, they're only a half game out, Mike, so hopefully they can get back in first by the time we get back on the air.
That sounds good.
All right, thanks again, everyone, for listening. We'll join you again soon. This has been the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast, and let's go Mets.